I'm Scott, and welcome to Episode 8, Series 1 of Child in Time, Growing Up in the 60s, Tales from the Playground. This time, we're out of the classroom and into the playground. Some of the things we did there and some incidents that happened. In Episode 3, Able to Cane, I mentioned my transition teacher, the prim and proper middle-aged lady who, you might recall, slapped me for not being relaxed enough during rest time. The infant school, that is, kindergarten to year 2, had its own student assembly on Mondays, and our teacher would often be called upon to address the audience of 5 to 8-year-old girls and boys. Now, several times when she had the floor, it was to admonish everyone, well, boys specifically, about a very disturbing development that, quite frankly, horrified her. She said that a group of boys had formed, and she paused dramatically, a gang. She shuddered at the word, telling us that this was a terrible thing to do, the worst thing that any boy could do. The very idea, forming a gang. She left it at that. There was no mention of what constituted a gang, or of any of the crimes that a gang might have perpetrated. In our own classroom, she reinforced her message about the evil of gangs. I knew what I must do. I had to form a gang. If it meant I was going to hang around the playground with several other 6-year-old boys and play games together and have fun, I wanted in. I approached a friend and said I was forming a gang and would he be willing to join? Sure, boss, was his reply. This was going well. I quickly enlisted about 5 other boys to join. This was great. I was a gang leader. Now, what to call my gang? The Sandpit Satans? Tricycle Psychos? No. No names. This all had to be on the down low. I got my gang into a tight circle and explained our first ruse. We were to stand each side of the door to our classroom, and when a girl came out, we would grab her arm from each side and yell, "Boo!" At lunchtime, all had free access to the classroom, and the teacher wasn't around, so we set up either side of the classroom door. Some girls were deliberately going in and out of the classroom to get the boo treatment, and they seemed to enjoy squealing and running away more than we did being the booers. Alas, my gang was short-lived. As soon as the very next day, my efforts to round up the gang were unsuccessful. Other schoolyard games had more appeal, apparently. But for the rest of the year, I had the satisfaction that our teacher had a gang leader in her midst, hiding in plain sight. I was a rebel, ne'er-do-well, a maverick, a renegade, a rogue, a subversive, a radical, and an agent provocateur. I did move on from gang life. I suppose I was one of the lucky ones. Marbles was probably the first game we played as children that involved taking another child's property and keeping it. There were 3 basic games. Holy, whereby you would attempt to be the child who got the last marble in the hole to win. And Ringy, Big Ringy and Little Ringy. Ringy had a more billiards or snooker feel to it, I suppose. Games could become quite intense. Once, during a particularly engrossing game of Holy, A boy came over and observed us for a minute. He stood looking down on us as we knelt down to play. Then he said, "Why do you bother with this? You're just playing for small spheres of glass. Way to bring down the mood." That child went on to become very successful in a learned profession, by the way. A real fun guy. In primary school, we played a game called Cockylora. A group of boys would line up along the school fence and on the command of Cockylora 1, 2, 3, would have to run to a point beyond the two or three boys in the middle. The boys in the middle had to tackle and prevent others from reaching the other side. If you were caught, you were also in the middle catching others running back and forth until one boy was left as the winner. Cockylora was a staple in many schoolyards. And like many other schools, Cockylora was banned because kids got hurt. Bones were broken in some of the takedowns to stop someone. Interestingly, it was not always the biggest kids that excelled. No, the more faster, smaller kids. Anyway, there was audible disappointment at assembly one day when the ban order came down. We weren't allowed to play Cockylora anymore. We loved the game, so what could we do? The solution was to play a different game altogether, called British Bulldog. In British Bulldog, a group of boys would line up along the school fence and, yes, you guessed it, the game was exactly the same, just a name change. The teachers seemed to give up on the idea of stopping us after that. On the big grass area, we played soccer for most of the year. Some cricket was played with a tennis ball in summer, but mainly we played soccer or football, as soccer is the true football. We played with a white ball called a Wembley. These were very popular in the 60s, and the soft synthetic design meant that you could kick the ball higher and longer than your little legs could with a regular soccer ball. The field bordered a house, as the school was in the midst of suburbia. The first time we kicked the ball into the nice lady's next door's yard, she was very nice about it and threw it back and said, "Enjoy your game." Well, a few months later, the lady threatened not just to keep our ball, but to stick a knife in it if we kicked it over into her yard just one more time. The games were largely uneventful until one day, a relief school teacher was on playground duty. Every teacher would walk around the bitumen concourse next to our field and never had any reason to come onto the field. This relief teacher was wandering about, seemingly deep in thought, and before he knew it, he was on the field, idling about, head fixed on the grass ahead. I thought, I know what's going to happen here. There was a boy in my year, although he grew up to be an average-sized adult, had a growth spurt early on and was much taller than the rest of us when we were all 11 or so. As a school photograph confirms, most of us only came up to his shoulder. Next time he had the ball at his feet, he lined up the teacher and thumped the ball into the back of the teacher's head. The teacher was momentarily stunned, quickly regained his composure and turned to face the now stock-still field of tittering boys. "Who did that?" with a grin on his face. Big Boy raised his hand. Why, boy?
We're playing our game here, sir.
The teacher stared at him for some time, possibly trying to find a kink in our boy's logic. Well, be careful. The teacher then strode off to the relative safety of the bitumen. At lunchtime, there was the first bell. That meant we had to sit on benches that lined the outside of the buildings to eat our lunches. Playing was not allowed until the second bell. I might talk more about this at some point, but in primary school, I had had one great year mid-primary for lots of reasons, but largely due to the fact that I had a nice falsetto singing voice and was able to perform in leading roles in our various class presentations. The very next year, and there isn't time at the moment to go into detail, my teacher did not hold me in any esteem at all. In fact, he hated me. My marks plummeted from being one of the brighter kids to bringing home marks just a bit better than remedial standard. Understandably, my parents were very concerned about this dramatic downturn, so my dad arranged to come to the school and talk to my teacher. Dad coming to the school was incredibly exciting for 10-year-old me. He arrived shortly before lunchtime, and my teacher went outside the classroom to talk to Dad. Everyone could see the men's intent discussion through the large windows along the classroom wall. The teacher seemed to be doing most of the talking. Totally unable to contain my excitement, I let everyone in the class know, "Hey, that's my dad. That's my dad." The lunch bell rang and we all filed past the two men, deep in serious conversation. I looked up at Dad, trying to catch his eye as I passed, but he never looked down. I was thrilled that soon Dad would have to walk right past the lunch of benches where we were all sitting having lunch. He'd have to walk right past everyone to get to the front gate. I would shout and wave when he came by. After what seemed an hour, it was probably only about 5 minutes, Dad came striding across the playground towards the front gate. He had his head down and looked serious. I waited until he was directly in front of me and yelled at the top of my voice, "Dad! Dad! Hey, Dad! It's me! It's Scott!" Dad stopped, and in a move like the James Bond opening gun barrel sequence, swung around and pointed at me and screamed, "You wait till I get you home!" He turned and strode off again. I stared at the space where Dad had been. The playground was silent momentarily, until slowly the usual lunchtime chatter resumed. I continued to stare straight ahead. "That was my dad," I said softly.